All right, welcome back. Defrag, number four, Gove, my good man Gove. You've got your shades on today.
Yeah, I...
Rough weekend?
No, I lost my regular glasses over the weekend, and now I'm stuck wearing my sunglasses.
That's not a good story. You didn't come up with a better story than that.
Oh, let's see, a better story than that. How about a migraine?
Yeah, all right. We could go with that.
Because that's technically true, too.
It's still not quite the sexy as, you know, I was out partying all last night. But in that vein, I just got back from Mix, Las Vegas.
Oh,
so
how was
that? It was a little crazy. The 90s party was awesome. It was really cool. So, yeah. But let's dive in. We've got questions here.
Great.
And let's get right to it. So, question number one. So, I've got a laptop, and the battery doesn't last as long as it used to. It's about a year or two old, the laptop, and probably not the battery. Is it because Windows 7 uses more power, or is it because the battery's going bad?
Generally speaking, you know, machines nowadays with lithium-ion batteries, you don't necessarily get the longevity that you would really want to. You know, you buy a machine, you expect it to last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, batteries don't last that long.
Yeah, the machine will probably last. Batteries aren't always that great.
That, and I mean, with Win 7 as compared to XP, a lot of people will say, you know, XP is better on the battery life than Win 7. But actually, Win 7 is really, really good about not consuming battery when it doesn't need to.
Yeah.
We also have some built-in tools in the OS to figure out, you know, what is going on with the power on your system. And there's a handy diagnostic to figure out what the state of your battery is.
And so what are the types of things that you would want to walk through with this user to make sure that they're getting the longest life they can out of their battery?
Oh, well, just there's a lot of different things that you can do on a machine. You know, if you've just purchased the machine, generally speaking, it is set up for, you know, good battery life defaults. There is the battery icon at the bottom of the taskbar here that you can check and see what power plan that you have that you're using. Generally, you have things like balanced, power saver, high performance. High performance will, you know, keep everything on maximum amount of time. There's generally very little sleeping involved. Hard drives don't spin down.
Yeah.
Balanced, really, is the machine, the OS, is really tuned to be using balanced all the time.
Yeah.
It's the perfect mix of getting the performance that you need, having the best graphics, and when you're on battery versus when you're plugged into the AC. So what balanced will do is when you're plugged into the AC, it'll crank everything up. It'll use, you know, the best CPU, the best video. Depending on what type of system you've got, you will you'll not switch back to, you know, a lower end video if you have the hybrid solutions.
Yeah.
Balanced is really good for when you're off battery or when you're on battery as well, and it'll do all the transitions. It'll make sure your hard drive spins down correctly. It'll dim your screen, all that kind of stuff.
So is there a way to tell with software whether it's the battery that's going bad?
Or absolutely.
And the battery's still got any life in it, or if you need to replace that?
Absolutely. There is a command line tool called PowerCFG.
Let's take a look.
Okay, so
let's see this run.
What you want to do is elevate a CMD window, you know, start CMD, right click, run as admin. I've already got an admin window up, so I don't really want to do that again. The command line to use is PowerCFG space dash energy. Nice, simple command line. What it'll do is take a trace of your system for about a minute. It'll munge a lot of data and kick you out a nice, pretty report. I don't really want to do the whole gathering of data right now, so I did that ahead of time, and here's the report. Just saves to the root of your system. And here we go. So we have an entire list of all the different analyses about my system right now. So it'll list errors, which is actually kind of interesting. So what I've done specifically on this machine is turned off my monitor timeouts. I've turned off, with USB devices, it won't enter suspend. And I've done that specifically for this display.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it going down while we're talking. And when we skip down, what we will see is battery information. So what we will see is the two different numbers here. There's the design capacity, and the last full charge. So the higher that the last full charge is to the design capacity, it means that, you know, your battery is doing well.
Yeah.
After, you know, a period of time, a year, 2 years, you'll notice that the last full charge number decreasing.
Yeah.
And that essentially says, you know, your battery is not lasting as long, or conversely, you're not charging it to full all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you'll want to do is, you know, plug it in for a good 12 hours, make sure that it's as full charge as possible, take another report, see what it's at. If it drops below 50% of what the advertised design capacity for this battery is, you'll probably want to look at getting a new one.
A new battery, yeah.
Or some cells may have failed in that battery.
Yeah.
So then usually like a 6-cell battery is like in banks.
And can you tell which that some cells have failed from the errors that you get in there?
No, unfortunately not from this particular report. You can't tell which cells it is.
But you can tell just because it's not charging that, you know, you've got something wrong.
Right.
Cool. Interesting. So another question in that vein. I've got Nick Fillingham gifted me his old tablet PC. It's an old HP TC1100.
Okay.
Which I used to have one back in the day. I love that machine. I'm playing with Art Rage on it. Love the stylus. But I had to get a new battery because, obviously, the battery was just completely shot on it.
Okay.
Now, the question is, I'm not going to use it very often. I'm probably only going to, you know, spark this thing up for, you know, Art Rage, playing around with it every once in a while, or a couple of, you know, projects.
Mm-hmm.
So should I leave it plugged in all the time? Should I take the battery out? Should I let the battery drain all the way? I mean, what's the best way to make sure that the battery is going to have some life on it, even though I know I'm not going to be using this thing every day?
Well, especially if you're not using it every day, but you might be using it, like, say, 3 times a week, or if you're using it for maybe only once a month, you kind of have to look at what your usage pattern is.
Yeah.
If you're using it, say, 3 times a week, I wouldn't do much different other than, you know, plugging it in, getting it a full charge. You want to depend on, are you setting it to sleep or hibernate most of the time? You know, you can just shut it down.
Yeah.
And it won't use any battery at that point because it's just off.
Mm-hmm.
If it's sleeping all the time, then it will be using battery and you'll probably want to just turn it off.
Yeah.
If for extended periods of time, what you really want to do is make sure it's fully charged, yank the battery.
Okay.
The battery is a fully charged device.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using this device like all around your house? Are you using it at your desk primarily?
Mostly just sitting at my desk.
So, you know, another thing that you can do is always use it without the battery.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not actually going around and using it as a true mobile device, if you're sitting at your desk, you can just plug it in, yank the battery, and then you don't have to worry about the battery losing its charge over time.
Yeah.
It'll maintain the longevity as long as possible.
Now that I'm not going to do because I notice that I keep pulling the power cord on it. I'm pulling the power cord when you're doing something without a battery in it.
That is very true.
Not good.
Usually I would do that recommendation for like a laptop that is a desktop replacement.
Yeah.
You know, it sits on the desk, it looks pretty, but it never goes anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
For that kind of thing, you know, you're not really at risk of pulling the cord.
Sure. Awesome. Okay. Next question. All right, so we covered in the first episode, I think, the slow startup with Windows. We covered the slow shutdown. So let's just round this one out and call it a day. We've got the slow resume from sleep. So the question is, my desktop takes about 5 minutes to resume from sleep. After a long wait, it shows the boot screen, text and all, which I assume means DOS, and then resumes Windows 7. How come? How can I change to speed this up? What do you think that is?
So the thing that piqued my interest on this one was saying that you see the DOS text screen.
Yeah.
Now, usually sleep...
And I have the same problem with the machine at home. We were talking about this earlier, and I can't wait to get home to check this out.
So it'd be really interesting because sleep isn't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Sleep is supposed to be, you know, an instant on to get to the desktop.
Yeah.
What it really sounds like is that you're coming out of hibernation.
Yeah.
Now, you could have the machine set up to be sleep and then hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen is, you know, after 15 minutes or whatever, you'll go to sleep, and then there's something called wake timers that will say, after an hour, I'm supposed to hibernate.
Yeah.
So after an extended period of time, it'll kick back on really quick and say, oh, it's time for me to hibernate, so then I hibernate.
Yeah.
At that point, yes, you will go through the full hibernation.
So you'll see it boot up just like you started your computer from a full off.
Right.
Yeah.
And it'll say, you know, resuming Windows on the screen. That is what you should see. If you see resuming Windows,
Yeah.
That is a telltale sign that it was hibernated.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was doing at home. I've got an old desktop machine that I leave plugged up into a plasma. It's in my living room. Yes, it's a plasma and an LCD. And it's old. Every time I walk up to it, you know, and I hit the power button, mm-hmm. I notice, and I thought I had the power set, so when I hit power, it goes to sleep, but it must be going into hibernate, or doing the sleep and then hibernate.
That is a distinct possibility.
Because I do see a DOS window when it starts up, which I'm like, oh, I gotta check one thing, and then I forget.
One thing, of course, that you can see is when that comes up, check your event log, and it'll say whether or not
check
it was, resumed from hibernation.
I'm going to get you a t-shirt that says, check the logs.
Check the logs, yeah.
Awesome.
I really should have that.
Yeah. So another problem that we'll cover is the hard drive churn. And so this is one of the problems that I had last night, and I'm just sitting at my computer checking email, and I hear my hard drive just start spinning up and then doesn't stop for like 5 minutes.
Okay.
And so the first thing I thought is, well, the hackers have breached my whole system, and they're now copying the last bits of important data that I have because... you know, always worst case.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to check out, find out what process that was, how to determine what file maybe it's reading from.
Mm-hmm.
So last night, the first thing I did is I started performance monitor and went to disk to see what was being used. And yes, the disk was getting hit pretty hard, and it was writing to the hard drive, which I guess is probably better in reading if you're worried about hackers. But you were telling me that there's better tools that I could use to do this. And I knew, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, Gov's going to say check the logs. That's the first thing. That's like, you have a tattoo somewhere on you that says check the logs, I'm sure. But I didn't want to check the logs. Who wants to go through logs? Come on, show me a better way to do this.
Well, I don't know necessarily if it's a better way, but there's a different way of doing
okay.
it. What you can do is use process monitor.
All right.
Now, you said that when you were checking the performance monitor,
yeah.
that you got a file name.
Yeah, it was going down, it was drilling down into users / let's see, users roaming app data, might have those two flipped, and then windows / themes, and it came out to be my wallpaper that I have set to change every 10 seconds.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem like that would be reading or writing that much data that fast because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a picture every 10 seconds. And it doesn't do it normally.
Right.
So
something is new.
Something was different, yeah.
Right. So what you could do is download Process Monitor. And since you know the name of the file already,
yeah,
you just start filtering. And Process Monitor has some really interesting filter mechanisms. I like going generic. When you hit the filter button, this little inverted funnel thingy, you'll get presented with a dialog box. And I just like to choose path and then contains to be the most generic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the name of that file that you had was... Microsoft Windows themes transcoded wallpaper.
Yes.
Okay. So you just put in transcoded wallpaper and nothing else. You don't need mm-hmm. anything else. You just click add, apply, and boom, it will instantly show you all accesses. Right now I've got logging turned off because you don't want it spewing all the time while you're doing this, but you set it to capture and then you'll be able to see every process that is touching that file.
Yeah.
If it's other than Explorer, which is what I just went through in order to find the file, so it'll obviously log those results.
So if it's KGB hacking...
You'll be able to find that. What you can also take a quick look at is... if you double-click any of these accesses and check the stack, you'll be able to tell if there's something like a particular add-on in the process that might be doing it. Like if it was Explorer and you've noticed, hey, this hasn't been doing this all this time,
mm-hmm.
but only Explorer is the one that's hitting this particular problem. You can see, well, what is loaded in Explorer right now that might be causing this.
Okay.
Now, I don't have anything currently in my Explorer process that would cause this, and my machine's not seeing this particular issue. But what you can do is get a log. This is a different log.
A separate log.
A separate log that we'll check.
Yeah.
But yes, you can get a Procmon log of that particular problem, and then we can investigate it and figure out exactly what is causing it.
Awesome. Well, next time I hear my hard drive start ticking away, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it definitely helps, you know, for a lot of different problems. Procmon is really good at figuring out, or at least letting you know, what types of things are happening on your machine at a given time.
Yeah. I know it's been good for my house to meet with you every week and have you go over all my problems. I appreciate that. All right, so next we've got Carolyn, who sent us a question. Said, are issues when we have users who scroll in Adobe Reader X10 or Adobe Acrobat 9 with two PDFs open? We get the NVIDIA error shown below. If we scroll with only one PDF open, we have no issues. We have this issue on multiple laptops in this order with the a video card, NVIDIA Quadro FX 880M. This happens on drivers 261.28 or newer. Screenshot below. If we use the drivers before that version, we do not have this issue. Also, if we use another PDF reader, it does not happen. We've also had our HP laptop support here, and they've replaced the motherboard and the video card on one of the problem laptops with no such luck. Any ideas?
Honestly,
she sent us a problem step recorder too, which I was thrilled about.
Yeah, that's no, awesome. I looked at that and it was great. It unfortunately didn't help in this case, but it was good to see people using it.
Yeah, so replacing the motherboard, that didn't do it.
I'm not entirely surprised.
Yeah.
She kind of really solved her own problem, though, because she said that when they moved to a later version of the driver, they started seeing the problem. So the standard, my only response to that would be roll back the driver.
Yeah, so you can't always use the latest driver
in
your setup. And there's really, unless there's some feature that you really need it for, you don't have to. I mean, come on, a lot of us are doing business here. We're not gaming, so you don't have to use the latest, greatest driver.
Even for gaming, I mean, unless there's a desperate need to currently move to the latest version, stick with what works.
If it works, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. The other one that she solved her own problem too was the other readers work. Like, she's probably talking about Foxit, and if you really need the latest driver and another reader works, then you can go that route. Or if you really need Adobe Reader for some reason or another, then you can roll back your driver. But other than that, it sounds like some issue where NVIDIA needs to figure that one out on their own.
Well, absolutely. There's the best thing that you can do is not just hide the problem.
Yeah.
You know, what you really want is for NVIDIA to fix the issue.
Yeah.
Or if NVIDIA has to work with Adobe in this case, because it was their PDF reader that was crashing the NVIDIA driver. So there's some interaction going on where they both may need to be involved.
Now, if it were you and you wanted to help try to get that fixed, would you try to send a bug to Adobe or to NVIDIA?
I would start with NVIDIA because it's their driver that's crashing.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that is happening in the Adobe process, but it's their driver that's crashing.
Yeah, and it's recreatable. They should be able
to
figure that out pretty easily.
It's also possible that it's not recreatable. So what may need to happen, and what we always prefer, is seeing the actual crash dump.
Yeah.
So, for any of these types of issues, we wanna be able to easily replicate it, and if we can't replicate it, it has to figure out what is different about the customer setup.
Excellent. Okay, Carolyn, so the rollback drivers or try a different reader, depending on which driver set you need. Excellent. All right, so we've got another one here. This one is, hi, I have a strange problem with libraries on Windows 7 Ultimate. Let me first explain a little about my environment. I have two volumes of my hard drive, C, which is NTFS and has the OS installed, and drive D, which I use to store my data. This drive D is protected by BitLocker. I have all my personal folders on drive D, except desktop, which is on drive C. When my computer is on, I unlock drive D and start using a computer. Problem: every time I open my computer, my libraries opens blank. They don't show any folders within them, even though I've added them. Note that all the libraries reside on drive D, which is protected by BitLocker. After I unlock the protected drive, the libraries still remain blank. Like, for example, the pictures library has a folder D, my personal folders, my documents, my pictures. But when I open the library, it says no folders have been included in this library. When I try to add it, it says my pictures is already included in the library. Please look at the attached screenshot. The same issue with music, books, and other libraries. Due to this issue, I'm not able to use libraries at all. Please let me know what data I should send to troubleshoot.
So this one's relatively, you know, complicated, and it's not a mainline scenario.
Yeah.
Troubleshooting steps would be to start moving things off of the BitLocker drive and back onto the C drive, make sure that the standard library use works correctly.
Yeah.
The other thing that is worth exploring is for not using BitLocker on the drive per se, but using EFS,
mm-hmm.
so encrypting file system,
yeah.
which would get you something very similar to what BitLocker is doing for you.
Yeah.
And that should work without any issues.
Yeah, it sounds like if it's a desktop machine, and mm-hmm. this is going to be a permanent hard drive that's connected in it,
or just another partition,
is going to be a better, better choice than BitLocker. Is kind of, I think of it as encryption for devices on the go.
I mean, you can use BitLocker in a bunch of different scenarios.
Yeah,
you know, it has its strengths. Generally speaking, for BitLocker, you'll want to encompass it on a single partition. Once things start happening on multiple partitions, like let's say if you had two OSs, each of them on BitLocker partitions, so separate partitions on the same system,
mm-hmm.
there have been known to be some interesting issues with that.
Is there a way to roll back BitLocker?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so they can roll back BitLocker, take that off so that they've got the bare drive, and then convert that to EFS or
absolutely.
Turn on EFS?
Yeah.
And where do you do that at?
You just choose the folder that you want to encrypt, and it's a property in the folder.
So it's by folder, too.
Yes.
Which is, I like that better than doing the whole drive anyway with BitLocker.
It has, you know, its advantages and disadvantages.
And so when you boot up the machine, will that folder be accessible right away?
As soon as you log in, it'll be accessible.
All right, and then all your pictures, all your directories and libraries will work. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, and then we've got one more question that I wanted to talk to you about, and it's kind of related to that. My machine here came with a solid-state drive on it and a platter drive. And, of course, the solid-state drives are always smaller, and you can tend to fill those up really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I go and install Windows on the smaller SSD,
mm-hmm.
But I don't want to have, like, program files, my pictures, my videos, all my documents stuff on mm-hmm. that SSD. I want to make sure that defaults to the platter drive.
Mm-hmm.
What's the easiest recommended way to do that?
Again, there's a couple of different ways of doing this. If you've already set up the machine, you've got the machine, you don't want to reinstall the OS.
Yeah.
You can't move the program files directory. That one stays where it is. But you can remap or add new locations for your documents.
Okay.
And I can show you how to do that by going to the libraries. So what you do is you have your different libraries set up. You can go to properties. What I tend to do is remove the pre-existing locations for the libraries.
Yeah.
Include a new folder and point that to the new location that you want on the
So when you remove those, that's not deleting the folder. It's still there, so you don't have to make sure you back that up ahead of time.
Exactly. You're just removing it from the library location.
Yeah.
So
you're saying don't look here anymore as
right,
a library.
Right. So, you know, when you save new things, mm-hmm. it'll automatically go to the library location, which will be pointed to at the redirected folder location. Now, if for some reason you don't want to do it through the libraries.
Yeah.
There is another way of doing it, which would be remapping the actual My Documents location.
Yeah, I think that's what I want to do, because I'd just like to have the entire directory moved off of the SSD.
So you can do that by going to the Documents library. Underneath that is the My Documents folder. Right-click on the folder, go to Properties, and then there's a Location tab.
Mm-hmm.
And here you can say move and then point it to the new location, and it will move the files over. It'll do everything that's required. Yeah. It'll set up all the locations in the rest of the system to say, yes, my documents are now located on this drive in this folder location.
Mm-hmm. And for program files, is that something where I just have to do that manually whenever I install something, or is there a way to default that?
No. What it'll do is it'll stay on, you know, the standard location.
Yeah.
You can point it to a different location, but you should be aware of a few different things. If you're on an X64 machine, for example, you won't get automatic redirection.
Okay.
So if you have a native 64-bit process installer, it'll go to the program files location.
Yeah.
If you have an X86 installer or an application runtime, it'll go to the program files parentheses x86 location.
Yeah.
So the system does this automatically for
you. Yeah.
Now, depending on the type of app that you're using, if it's a very straightforward, like a game, right? There's no shared components or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, move it over to that location.
Yeah.
It'll just read and write from that location without any issues.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a more complex application with shared components, especially on an X64 machine, you might want to be more careful about installing to a different area.
Yeah.
So default locations, you tend to want to do...
keep Office and the Adobe Suite and...
Leave those to the defaults.
These big ones. Okay.
Games, no problem. There shouldn't be any issue moving that to a different location.
So when you say leave it to the default, I should have it installed on C?
Most installers
can I use the same path but on D?
You'll want to leave it on C if you can at all help it.
Okay, because you're taking up my space.
I understand I've taken up your space.
It's you're just cramping me.
It's just that's what's been tested.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Now again, depending on what you specifically are doing with it, you may be able to get away with moving it to a different location. For example, if you're just using Office, standard. Home Student Edition, or even Premium. If you're on an X64 machine,
you have
the choice when you buy the DVDs whether or not you want to install the 32-bit version or the 64-bit version of Office.
Yeah.
Most of the time, people will pick the 32-bit version because that's what they get defaulted to.
Yeah.
In that case, the redirection involved when it's pointing to the program files x86 directory. There's other components that need to know where that location is.
Yeah.
Especially other 32-bit components.
Yeah.
So
I've noticed, like the Adobe Suite, there's an Adobe Commons folder that they stick in there, so it's going to look for that kind of thing.
Right.
And if I've defaulted or if I've set it to the D drive, do you think it goes and looks for that path, or do you think it defaults back to looking on C?
Well, the part of it will
this
get
is probably where it gets. Questionable.
You definitely get a little bit more interesting. So for those complex suites where it does install common files or shared components, you won't get that on the other partition because you wouldn't have changed that particular path.
Yeah.
That'll stick to the C drive.
Mm-hmm.
Those applications also tend to have the ability to come with complex scripts, so you could tell it to go to different locations based on those install scripts.
Yeah.
But that's on a per application basis.
Cool. So in the meantime, what I do is every time I install something and I see it comes up with a path that says C program files, I just change a C to a D.
Yep.
And I guess now I know if I start having some problems with any of the things I've installed, I know one thing to start troubleshooting.
That's true. The other thing to consider is that upgrades won't necessarily work the way that you would like it to work.
And one of the problems that I have with this way that I'm doing it is I tend to hit enter so fast I keep skipping past the C program, so I never change it, and I'm like, oh, I've got this huge suite installed in my C drive now. But
yeah, and what you don't want to do is try and go back after the fact and change, like move the files around or change the registry.
Yeah.
If you do something like that, uninstall the app, reinstall it again.
Absolutely.
Point to the new location.
Don't just start dragging and dropping.
A lot of applications that have DRM associated with it are very particular about where they get installed and what changes after the fact. So, go through the proper install and uninstall mechanism for the application.
Will do. All right, and that's our show for this week. Thank you, Gove. And if you have questions or you need some help, you can send us an email at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave comments in the show comments for this week, and we'll check it out next week, or send us an email. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Have a good week.